Hey, everybody. We're in the midst of a few months of focusing on movement skills for climbers. But honestly, I'm not happy with just putting more info out there. So we're making an effort to not only collect the dots, but to connect the dots. And the main place I'm doing that is in our monthly newsletter, The Current. Once a month in your inbox, you'll get not a sales email, but my recent light bulb moments or interrogations of how we've always done things and what we could maybe be doing better. You'll also get the dots connected for you between all of the podcast episodes, blog posts, YouTube videos, and more, so that together we can learn, grow, and excel. The link is right there in your show notes. Thanks for the support.
Maybe don't know.
What's up, everybody? I am your host, Chris Hampton. Welcome to episode 61 of the Power Company Podcast, brought to you by PowerCompanyClimbing.com. If you are here on this episode, you most likely listened to the previous episode, episode 60, with Dr. Shannon O'Grady from Gnarly Nutrition. And we've got Shannon on again today to talk about all things protein. Protein is a pretty... surprisingly to me, a pretty hotly debated topic. I do most everything by feel, less by science. And if I feel like I need more protein, I eat more protein. If I don't feel like I need it, I don't eat it. That's just the way I operate. But some people take science as the absolute gospel and ignore feeling entirely, ignore anecdote entirely. And, you know, that's their right. They can do that if they want to. I just don't operate that way. So I expect that I'll probably get all sorts of people posting scientific studies saying that all of this is wrong. And, you know, that's okay. You can do that if you want to. I'm not going to read them, to be perfectly honest, because I just don't care that much. I spent about 9 hours one day looking for studies that seemingly contradicted each other, and it's shockingly easy to find scientific studies whose abstracts contradict each other. And, you know, so I'm just going to go by what works for me. I mean, that's how science starts anyway. It almost always starts as anecdote, and then they look for the reason why. So, you know, I'm going to do it my way. And this is my podcast, so I can. Okay, we are going to get into this episode with Shannon O'Grady talking about all things protein. And thanks again to Gnarly for sitting down and educating me a little on BCAAs in our last episode and in protein in this episode. And like I said before, Power Company has no affiliation with Gnarly other than they sent us their products. We like them. I wanted to talk to them about them. And that's where it ends. And while I was in Salt Lake City talking to Gnarly, I also had the chance to chat with Alex Honnold really quickly, and I asked him about using Gnarly products. He's also not a Gnarly athlete, but he does love their vegan protein, which we talk about in this episode. So I just wanted to get his take on it.
I'm Alex Honnold. I hate to say use as a food, you know, I drink. I'm Alex Honnold. I consume the Gnarly Vegan Feast, well, the vegan meal replacement, mostly the chocolate, but occasionally the vanilla. I do a lot of Gnarly. It's like my favorite easy drink substitute meal thing. I don't even know what you call it, but it's just so delicious and it's like perfect.
Maybe don't know. This time.
We like to characterize our company as more of a nutrition company. And I think if you can meet all of your nutritional needs with whole foods, then you should go for it. Power. Power. This time to build. Power. This time. Time to build. Power.
for round two here. I'll tell you what, before we start talking about protein, why don't you give me just a brief background of who you are so that I can let people know what your qualifications are, because they know I have zero qualifications when it comes to nutrition or protein or any of this. So.
Right. I don't know if you have zero qualifications, but I'm the director of product for Gnarly Nutrition. What does that mean? I lead a product development. I head up product quality. So I manage the manufacturing of our products, the kind of how we ensure that our products are high quality and clean and pure. And I also work with our athletes and our team to educate consumers and even do athlete education. Because amazingly, a lot of athletes don't know that much about kind of how to use nutrition to kind of maximize performance and recovery.
Yeah.
I got into sports nutrition with kind of a background in biology and nutritional physiology. That was kind of in a different context. I did some research in water metabolism and in humans, but I always had a strong personal interest in performance. I'm a recovering endurance athlete.
That's a great way to put it.
So I think if you try to do anything that's, you know, on a level of time that's over 4 hours, or even under that, I'd say over 2 hours, nutrition has to be a pretty integral part of your plan.
Yeah. The only thing I do for 4 hours is sleep.
I don't know. Long climbing days, like with an approach and climbing all day and the way back, I would count that as, as a form of endurance. But yeah, so I got really interested in it. And with a science background, of course, I got super geeked out and nerdy about it and, learned a lot and then just decided that was the direction I wanted to go, and found Gnarly and our value systems matched up with what we believed in terms of nutrition.
That's important.
And quality, and it was a good fit.
Yeah, I think it's important for the athletes. It's important for people to know that, you know, what I can see is that you're obviously excited about this stuff and you care about it and you're, like you said, you geek out about it. And I mean, I think that's really important to have instead of just, hey, here's a protein powder, let me grab that. You want to let people know what's in it, why it works, how it works, all of that. So
yeah, and the fun thing about nutrition too, and about science in general, you know, is one, nothing's set in stone. I mean,
right,
certain things. Global warming, climate change. Sadly, not enough people realize that those are set in stone. But in the field of nutrition, you know, constant research in new areas just kind of opens up new ideas about, you know, what we should be taking, when we should be taking it, how we should be taking
right.
it. And it's fun. And so it's a continuous learning process for me, both because sometimes it's hard to stay up on top of all of the most current research, especially with everything else that I do. But it's fun and I love it. I love learning, and that's a good basis, I think.
Yeah, and things change so quickly. I mean, I was just kind of delving into this world of research papers and how often they're proven or disproven or what all that means. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty shocking how quickly science changes its mind on things, or not necessarily changes its mind, but finds out new evidence.
For sure.
And goes a different direction.
Yeah. I mean, there's this big movement now to not only, I mean, it's a huge process to get a research paper published,
you know, right.
in a peer reviewed, even top tier journal. But there's an even larger movement to at the same time release all the data that went into that research.
Right.
So that independent groups can perform either the same statistical analysis cited or different stats, just to make it more of a transparent process. Cause there have been, you know, some studies that have been called back. But yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, ever-growing field for sure.
Well, that's cool. That's really good to know. So let's jump into protein.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's how most people enter the world of supplements. You know, at least in my experience, that's where most people take their first leap into using a powder of some sort.
It's the gateway drug.
Yeah, totally. So, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions, including my own, I'm sure. And I would just love to know the details behind it. So, number one, there are a bunch of different kinds of protein that you can buy in powder form and mix into a drink. Can you tell me a little about those, what they are, and what works better than the others?
Sure. I mean, I think generally the, you know, king of all proteins is considered dairy-based protein. So,
and that's whey protein, right?
Well, casein is another kind of subsection of,
gotcha,
of dairy protein. And there's a little difference in between those I'll get to in a minute. But so then you can find whey protein isolate, whey protein concentrate. And then, although you don't see them as much anymore, there are hydrolysates.
Okay.
So whey protein isolate. And those are the difference between protein isolate and protein concentrate, really the percentage of protein. So the protein, you know, that's taken from the dairy goes through a concentration process. Whey protein concentrate is typically, you know, in the range of 70 to 80% protein.
Okay.
So meaning that of the powder, 80% of it is protein.
Right.
Isolates are more concentrated. So more processed and more concentrated. They're about 90% protein.
Oh, gotcha.
Because of that, so there's, you know, people love to argue about stuff. And this would be one of those things that they argue about is
right,
which is better. And so whey protein isolate has more protein per gram, has more, less fat. So for people really trying to control, you know, their macros, or they really want to minimize fat,
right,
you know, that is a benefit. At the same time, it has a little bit of lactose, but negligible. So benefits of that are higher protein per gram, you know, and no lactose. Whey protein concentrate still has a lot of protein in it. I mean, 80% protein, there's
sure,
only 10% difference between those two. It has some lactose. It has a little bit of fat, like very little bit, like a gram or so, in a complete like 20 gram of protein concentrate serving. And but what it does have that, and this is where the argument comes in, is some of the biofactors that go along with the protein, people argue help with muscle protein synthesis. So you get those biofactors in the concentrate. You don't get them
you don't
in
get
the
them
isolate.
In the isolate. Gotcha.
Yeah. You know, and with the fats, it's a minimal amount of fat. There are fatty acids, mm-hmm, but this becomes, you know, another thing to consider when looking at, you know, the source. Are you sourcing your protein from a grass-fed cow, or are you sourcing it from
right,
a conventionally raised cow? What's the quality of fat in one versus the other?
Gotcha. You know,
grass-fed cows are higher in conjugated linoleic acid and other beneficial fatty acids. So that question is less of an issue with whey protein isolate because, once again, there's hardly any fat in it. But
right,
it becomes a little more relevant in whey protein concentrate. And then hydrolysates are actually the protein broken down even further into basically chunks of amino acids. So it removes an element of the digestion. And so the argument is that it's better absorbed.
So it's easier. So you're not digesting it at all. It works similar to BCAAs?
I mean, you're still breaking up the peptides, but
okay,
to a much smaller extent than you are,
gotcha,
as the BCAAs.
So
BCAAs
an easier
are
digestion.
The singular amino acids. Yeah, easier digestion. They tend to not taste so great, and
right,
I don't
which
know
for some people might be totally fine.
For some people, might be totally fine.
For me, it's not okay.
I'm on the same page. Yeah. So, so in terms of like protein powders in the dairy category, those are your main ones. There's been a lot of kind of beef protein products coming up now.
Right.
And beef protein isolate, it's so the quality of a protein can be measured in a number of different ways. The two kind of most important things to consider are how fast or how it's assimilated, so how much of it we actually take in and absorb and use.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, so we talked, when we talked about branched chain amino acids, we talked about the role that leucine plays in muscle protein synthesis.
Right.
And so the quality of a protein can also be judged by the amount of leucine in that protein. So once again, dairy reigns strong with their super high leucine content. It's really right. well digested. Beef protein isolate leucine content isn't as high.
Okay.
So I would argue that it's not as high quality of a protein.
Sure.
And then we get to a lot of the vegan proteins. So it's a misconception. I often hear a lot of people say, oh, they're not complete proteins. Like you have to combine, legume proteins with rice protein in order to get a complete amino acid profile. Now, while you don't maybe see as complete or as high of amino acids across the spectrum in vegetable proteins versus in kind of dairy proteins,
mm-hmm.
There are some super high quality, like pea protein is super high quality, and it's not lacking. It's just not as high as dairy.
Right.
So pea protein isolate or any legume protein is also really high in leucine, has a good kind of complete amino acid profile. Where you benefit from mixing kind of grain and bean proteins is more like my job. It's a formulation aspect. So pea proteins are super dense. Rice proteins are super grainy. You mix them together and you get a little bit better, I hate this word, but it's like the only word, and we always joke about it in the office, you get a better mouthfeel. So it's like smoother.
Sure.
And that is the real kind of benefit from mixing those two proteins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quick question on the vegan protein and just vegan protein in general. I know a lot of people believe that if you're vegan, it's going to be really, really difficult to get enough protein. Is there a benefit to using a vegan powder in that case? I don't know. Or can you get enough protein just eating vegan food?
You can get enough protein just eating vegan food.
Okay.
The things that I over protein intake, when I hear that somebody's vegan, the first thing I think of is iron intake and B12 intake.
Gotcha.
So
protein isn't your main concern
no,
to begin with.
No, I mean, I think it depends on the type of vegan we're talking about. Like much like everything,
sure.
there's a range. You know, I think if you're eating vegan, you have to make more of an effort to think about what you're taking in and the protein content. But you can get, playing footsie.
Didn't know if that was your foot or a table leg under there.
You can get enough protein through legumes and even other sources of vegetable and meat substitutions and things like that. I mean, if you're just a salad eater, then yeah, it's
right.
a concern.
Right.
But for someone that actually thinks about it, there are plenty of options to get enough protein throughout the day.
Okay. And while we're talking about enough protein, what is that? What do you recommend? What does the science say
sure.
that we need daily?
Okay. So, I mean, the RDA is super outdated. The recommended daily allowance for protein, I think for individuals is like 0.8 grams per kilo, which mm-hmm. is, I would argue, probably not enough for a general, not someone that's training on a regular basis, but most people.
Right.
But because we live in America, most people probably overdo that anyways. I don't
right.
think it's a big concern. Athletes definitely need more protein. The general recommendation for endurance athletes is it's in the 1 gram per kilo to 1.6 grams per kilo. For strength athletes, it's higher than that, 1.6 to 2 or 2.2 grams per kilo.
Okay.
There's some people that believe that kind of weight-based measurements are a little bit outdated. I tend to think a lot of the studies are done with individuals in a particular weight range.
Sure.
And don't necessarily incorporate, and climbers don't fall into this category, but like bodybuilders that are, you know, 180 to 280 pounds.
Right.
A lot of the studies don't include individuals like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah, they're going to be on an extreme, right? They're going to be needing and consuming a lot more protein than the average person or the normal athlete.
Completely. So I do stick with the, I believe that the protein recommendations, per, you know, weight are accurate. More recent studies, I'd say in the last, you know, 5+ years have come out showing that, and it's pretty interesting that a regular distribution of protein intake over a day, as opposed to skewed protein intake. And when I say that, what I mean is, like, say we're dealing with someone who needs to take in like 100 grams of protein over the course of the day based on weight. And that's on the low end. That would be a pretty light person. So it's better to take that 100 grams and divide it up into fairly even doses throughout the day.
Okay.
And than it is to take more protein in the morning or more protein in the evening.
Right.
And most people, like, you know, with our cereal based breakfast eating, I say most people are guilty of having a pretty low protein breakfast and eating most of their protein at night.
Right.
So, so a couple of things kind of surrounding that are that the dose of about 20 to 30 grams of protein in a sitting has been shown to maximally stimulate muscle protein synthesis.
Okay.
So given that, and that is 20 grams of protein separated by, I think it's like 3 to 4 hours between each 20 gram serving.
Okay.
So over the course of, you know, of 12 hours, you know, you're looking at 4 to 5 servings of 20 grams if you're in the 80 to 100 gram. And in that, if you're doing that, then you're maximally stimulating muscle protein synthesis. And a lot of that is driven by that leucine content. So in the 2 to 3 gram range of leucine is where you see that muscle protein synthesis stimulated to mm-hmm. its maximal amount.
Yep.
So that lines up also really well with the dosing we were talking about with branched chain amino acids yesterday. So
sure.
that 5 grams and the 2-to-1-to-1 ratio is 2.5 grams of leucine. So kind of the take home message is to evenly distribute
spread
your protein
out, yeah.
across the day. You know, if you can get 20 to 30 grams, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not that much.
Okay.
For, you know, it's one serving of a protein shake. It's, you know, like 4 to 6 ounces of meat. I don't know what the equivalent like lentil serving would
sure,
be, but
sure.
you can get it from kind of non-meat vegetables and legumes as well.
Okay. Spreading it out like that over, you know, several sittings, is there an amount that we can assimilate at a time or in a day? Why is that better to spread it out instead of having it all at one time?
Yeah, so a couple of things on that. There is a limit to the amount we can assimilate. I think the research has shown that number is in that 20 to 30 gram range.
In one sitting.
It's like, it takes like, maybe like, I think it takes about an hour to digest 10 grams of protein.
Okay.
So you're looking for 20 grams. That's about 2 hours. So kind of gets to that spacing, why mm-hmm. that spacing is key.
Yep.
And if so, you're eating any more than that, you're basically just, you know, it's
your body's
through.
Just going to get
not
rid
absorbing
of
absorbing it. No.
Gotcha.
There was a study. So most of the studies that have been done have shown, you know, either 20 or 30 grams, you get this increase, and then anything more than that, it just plateaus
yep.
in terms of muscle protein synthesis. So they've tested up to like 90 grams, I think, in compared to 30 grams, and you saw no increase.
Gotcha.
In the 90 grams.
That's good to know, because I think that a lot of people just take this like cursory look at it and then go, I just need more protein, more protein, more protein, more protein, you know, and end up with probably what's way too much if they're, you know, if they're using protein shakes or supplements.
Yeah. I mean, the way too much is also an interesting thing. You know, is there a danger to consuming too much protein? I haven't really seen, unless you have like kidney dysfunction. I haven't seen evidence that suggests that there is. If you're stressing out about it, then yeah, you know.
Sure. So way too much isn't necessarily the right phrase. Maybe it's that they're just taking in more than they can handle or more than they need.
Than their body needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Quick question. When I did a recent podcast with Neely Quinn, who I know you've talked with as well, we talked a little about protein and how much a person should get. And interestingly, nutrition is one of these topics, as I'm sure you know, that there's some pushback on. People have strong opinions about nutrition and what they need.
Sure. It's right up there with religion and vaccines.
Politics.
And politics. And, yeah. You shouldn't talk about at dinner.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Which is interesting to me. I didn't realize that was the case, but in talking with Neely, and when I put the podcast out, I got this feedback from people, and several people use the example of mother's milk as like, this should be the gold standard. And it only has this much protein, which is a much lower amount of protein. And, you know, their argument was that's at a time when our bodies are growing the most and we only need this tiny bit of protein. Why should we need it when we're adults and we're athletes? What is your thought on that? And so have you heard this argument?
I haven't heard this argument. My brain's going like, yeah, lots of cogs turning. So my first reaction to that is, interestingly, given my whole spiel on the 20 to 30 grams thing, you actually need more protein as you age, as you get older. So older people benefit from more protein. And that is the one case maybe where you see increases in muscle protein synthesis above and beyond.
Right. And is that because we have, you know, decreased muscle as we age?
Yeah, or I'm guessing. You know what? I don't know the answer to that question.
Our body just slows down that synthesis, or?
But yeah, that would be what I would guess.
Sure.
I bring it up to illustrate the point that at different times in our life, there are definitely different things going on, largely dictated by hormones. Mm-hmm. I would argue that while I can't give you specific hormone levels or any, I would argue that what we see in a baby, the amount of growth, where they get their energy. I mean, babies have brown fat, you know, that, you know, they use and is a metabolic source in and of its own. Their physiological kind of
makeup
is vastly different.
Yeah.
Vastly different
from
that of, and they sleep more. If you look at their eating schedules.
Sure.
If you look at, you know, that milk is their only, depending on, you know, your strategy as a mother or father, that milk is their only source of nutrition. So while I can't like quote the science, you know, I just don't think that's a valid comparison. And I apologize to people that do, but that's my, you know,
sure. Well, you're totally allowed your opinion. And,
thanks.
You know, I mean, I have my thoughts as well, and they're similar to yours. But, you know, I think everyone's allowed their opinion. So I was just curious your thought on what these people brought up to me. So
yeah, I mean, I'm totally a proponent of breastfeeding and think it's super important. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I think
we just have different needs when we're babies versus when we're aging athletes and recovering endurance athletes.
And if you look at, you know, generally the animal kingdom and when any kind of mother's milk is used for growth, it's only during a pretty limited period at the beginning of the animal's life.
Yep.
And I think that's probably
there's a reason for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Are there other types of protein that we didn't get to before I sidetracked you there?
I mean, there are a million different types of protein.
Common ones.
Soy protein, also good protein's gotten some bad, we don't use it in our products, but it's gotten a bad rap. I think just because people worry that it's because it has soy naturally has phytoestrogens in it, which are compounds that mimic the estrogen in our bodies.
Controversy I remember hearing about years ago.
Yeah. So I think the general concern is that it's competing or binding, it's either competing or binding to hormone binding sites in the body that estrogen, you know, would bind to, or in the case of males that, you know, maybe you wouldn't want.
Right.
A substance like estrogen binding to. The amount in soy products is pretty low. And if you just look at the amount of even a vegan that eats a lot of tempeh and tofu, like the amount that they would be getting, I don't really believe that it's a valid concern. We don't use soy products in gnarly stuff. And we tend to shy away from soy-based ingredients. Like we use sunflower lecithin in our products as opposed to soy lecithin. And that's largely because of the allergenic qualities of soy.
Oh, gotcha.
So kind of getting back to trying to make the line as accessible to as many people as we can. You know, we try to minimize, we test all of our products for gluten. We, you know, try to minimize the amount of soy, or minimize, we don't have any soy in our products. And in our products that aren't dairy-based, you know, we don't have any animal products in those. They're all vegan.
Right. So we talked a little about, you know, spreading it out throughout the day. What if you have some sort of athletic event, whether it's a workout or performance or whatever? Is there a better way to time your protein when those things are happening?
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I'm a big fan of taking branched chain amino acids before or during, both because, you know, it plays a role in that preventing the muscle breakdown if you have those amino acid levels in your blood, but also because it's lighter on the stomach. But I'm also a huge proponent of following up with protein and in kind of that window following, you know, the 1 to 2 hour window following.
What if someone's not taking BCAAs at all and they're just using protein sources?
Yeah. So I would start with, you know, if you're eating three meals a day and you're doing the 20 to 30 grams at each of those meals, then you can do another 2 to 3 snacks spaced throughout the day. And I would just be sure that the timing of that snack that's right before your training or your workout or whatever you're going to do makes sense for what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you're not taking something super heavy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Make sure it's something you feel good on instead of bogging you down.
And I think that timing is really important to work out ahead of time. Everybody's different. Some people, you know, met ultra runners that can, you know, chow down a burrito while they're running and they do fine, and others that, you know, like to run pretty light in terms of what they take in. So it's variable, it's very person dependent, and it's something that should be worked out ahead of time. Like, I'm a big believer in practicing your nutrition.
Yep.
And if you have something that matters to you, a goal that you're you know, striving for, you got to get that stuff figured out early.
Yeah, I found when I was performing quite a bit, music wise, that if I ate right before I performed, I had a harder time with my breath control.
Huh, interesting.
And that's carried over to sport climbing and bouldering now that I've paid attention to it. I've noticed that if I eat something big, something heavy, I have a harder time controlling how I breathe.
I wonder if it affects your diaphragm.
Yeah, could. Just I have no idea.
Full stomach.
I just know that it happens, and I, you know, so I plan for that, and I just don't eat anything heavy right before climbing. So,
cool.
When you're taking protein for recovery after the workout, what do we need to think about to be able to make it to maximize that recovery? I know we need carbs with it, and I've heard the 3-to-1, 4-to-1, all sorts of ratios. where does the science say we should be, and what does experience tell you?
Sure. So we can kind of split those, you know, the three things. So I also am a big believer in having a good source of fats, because as athletes, and you know, I would consider a lot of climbers that have a long approach and then are climbing all day and then are hiking back home and have packs on, there's an endurance element to that.
Sure.
And a lot of endurance athletes and store fats in their muscles. They're called intramuscular triglycerides. They use fatty acids to create energy.
Right.
And adding fat in that recovery nutrition replenishes those things. So protein, carbohydrates, and fat. So I just kind of said why you need some fat in there.
Yep.
The carbohydrates are there because they help with basically glycogen loading. So carbohydrates are stored as glycogen in the muscles, and you're basically replenishing that. And the 3-to-1, 4-to-1 in terms of the insulin response, which helps your muscles take in those carbohydrates and store them as glycogen, is maximized. And that's kind of the science that I've seen is in that range. The protein, the one, is for muscle protein synthesis. So those three things are the reason why you're combining those macronutrients.
Gotcha.
There's some debate over the kind of what that window is that you know, in terms of time.
Post-workout.
Yeah. I'd say I tend to just go with the as soon as possible is great.
Yep.
You know, that doesn't mean like you have to be chugging a protein shake like 5 minutes after you've, you know, done something hard. But like if you can get it in an hour, wonderful. If it's 2 hours, it's not the end of the world, you know, but I would try to get it in a 2 hour window.
Yep.
The sooner the better.
Yeah. I've found for myself that recovery is better generally if I drink some protein source with fats and carbohydrates. And I've always preferred just chocolate milk, good chocolate milk. And part of that's just because I like chocolate milk.
It's delicious. You know?
Yeah. And so that's what I've preferred. And I can definitely tell a difference if I do that immediately after exercise, mm-hmm. or if I wait an hour, you know, and that's one of the things that I like about having a powdered protein of some sort is that I can do it immediately after climbing because I don't need to keep chocolate milk cold in my car, which is difficult, but I can keep water in the car and I can keep the powder in the car. And when I get back to the car after hiking out of the boulders or the crag or whatever, then I can do it right then. And that seems to work better for me than even if I skip that, eat dinner 45 minutes later, having that chocolate milk immediately after or that protein immediately after seems to help me quite a bit.
Yeah, I've had the same experience, and I think I generally hear that from most people too. I mean, there's the convenience of the powder, even if you're, you know, on a 4-day trip somewhere, and you're not carrying chocolate milk, or you're not carrying a bunch of sources of protein, you know, that are whole foods.
Yeah.
Just having the powder and being able to mix it is really convenient. And I think getting it in as soon as you can when your body's ready for it is ideal.
Yep. And not all of us have sprinter vans with refrigerators that we hike out to. So
this is true.
You know, I think that's the easy way to do it is with these protein or these protein powders. With the powder, when we're looking to get a good protein powder, what should we be looking for? Are there signs that we can see that say this isn't the protein powder you want? Or this is?
Right. Yeah, so I think it gets back to kind of also what someone's goals are, and if they have any dietary restrictions. So dairy-based protein tends to be the best in terms of absorption and assimilation. In terms of high-quality dairy protein, You know, we use grass-fed whey protein both because, you know, we use a concentrate. We believe, you know, that in kind of the lower processing that you see with concentrates, you get some biofactors that help with muscle protein synthesis. We also use New Zealand-based grass-fed protein because of kind of the environmental impacts. It's GMO-free, it's antibiotic-free,
right?
You know, synthetic hormone-free. So we believe in those things. If you don't, I think whey protein in and of itself is a good
place to look.
Good place to look. For vegan proteins, pea protein, I think, is the top vegan protein that I can come up with off the top of my head. And I would say soy protein is a pretty close close second, but pea protein isolate has really high in the essential amino acids. It's really high in leucine as well, not as high as dairy, but pretty darn high. It mixes really well. It has little to no aftertaste, so you know, in terms of taste or enjoyability, it's a good vegan protein to look for.
And are peas themselves a really good source of protein?
Yeah, most legumes are pretty high in protein.
That's interesting. I'd never really thought about it, but I love peas, and I never think about buying them, but now I should.
You should.
Are there other things with protein that, again, like we did with the BCAAs, that I just am not knowledgeable enough to ask? Are there things we should be thinking about?
I have podcast brain, but probably think about what I should have said, you know, in 10 minutes. But
well, we've got years. We can do more of these. So.
Okay. So there's some studies showing, I think there was a study that came out showing that including digestive enzymes, in particular proteases, which are digestive enzymes that help break down protein, help with assimilation of the protein.
Okay. And where do we find these digestive enzymes?
Is it something gnarly you just products?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I mean, the digestive enzyme blend in Gnarly contains a bunch of different enzymes.
So you should be looking for these in the powders that you buy.
Or... Yeah, I mean, I it's not a necessity, but it helps.
Okay.
One, it helps. So in our enzyme blend, we, as I mentioned, we use a whey protein concentrate. Whey protein concentrates have some lactose naturally. Mm-hmm. One of the enzymes in our enzyme blend is a lactase. So any enzymes or proteins, an easy way to kind of, when you see a word, to know it's an enzyme, it always ends in an ASE. So protease, lactase, cellulase, those are all enzymes.
Gotcha.
Proteases break down protein, lactases break down lactose. So by including
that's a lot simpler than it sounds when I read it.
It's the same thing with sugars and OSE.
Oh, got ya.
Sucrose, glucose.
Yep.
So by including lactase and proteases, you know, we've had people that have otherwise been unable to do whey protein concentrates because they're lactose intolerant.
Right.
Say that they like our products for that reason, and that digestively, you know, it works for them. We also include probiotics and prebiotics for that same reason.
Gotcha.
But you know, if a protein doesn't have those things, is it a bad protein? No, it's still a great protein. But once again, it's just a little edge that Gnarly has.
Sure, sure. I'm glad it's there.
Sure.
Okay. I think if that's all you need to say about protein, then I think I'm good, and we can just come back when you realize what you meant to say.
Maybe I'll come to Lander.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Okay, Shannon, thanks. Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again to Shannon and to all the folks over at Gnarly for inviting me in and educating me a little on protein, which, like I said, is a hot button topic. It's a little shocking and a little bit sad, actually, that's what we choose to argue about. But anyway, you know, you can choose whatever you want. For me, I know that I need protein. I can feel it when I need it and when I ingest it, it does me good. So I encourage you to experiment for yourself and see if you like using protein powders and whether you like the whey or the vegan or what works best for you. Give it a try. And you can get 20% off of any of the Gnarly products on their website at gonarly.com and use the code POWERUP20 when you're checking out, and that'll get you 20% off. And say thanks to them over there for that. I appreciate them working with me. They also gave our sponsors free sample packs, and our highest tier sponsors get a free shaker bottle from Gnarly. So that's huge. I'm always trying to hustle for those guys because they support us. And you can find us, as always, at powercompanyclimbing.com. You can support the podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/powercompanypodcast, or you can go to our website, click the podcast tab. You can get there from there as well. You can find us on the Facebook. Please go join us over there. You can find us on the Instagram. You can find us on Pinterest. You will not, however, ever find us on Twitter, because we don't tweet. We scream like eagles.
It's time to build.